Okay. I'm Amanda Palmer, and if we weren't on the radio, I don't know. Can you say fucking on the
I
radio?
can do the boop
Yeah,
over it.
Jessica's like, musician, blogger, doer of things, connector of people.
Sounds good. Amanda Palmer. It's on Kickstarter. It says that you backed 28 projects. Is that right?
That wouldn't surprise me. I don't count them as I go.
They count. So you can you don't have to.
Exactly.
And for the purposes of this story, I have to ask you, have any of those projects that you've backed got the money and then not done the thing that they said they were going to do?
Yeah. I mean, this is the big looming question about crowdfunding and Kickstarter, which is the artist's responsibility. And, people tend to think that artists are just fundamentally flaky. And whether that's true or not, I'm not sure. But I see a lot of artists working very hard and stepping up their accountability. And there's definitely been a few projects where, it's been months and months and months, and there's been no communication. The thing that I find more important than an artist dropping the ball on the content is whether or not they're communicating with their backers. And I'm very happy to get updates month after month after month after year saying, oh my God, there are yet more complications and there's yet more manufacturing problems and this is what's happening and can everyone just hold on? As long as I'm connected, as long as the artist is communicating what the problems are, that's all life. It's just the way things go. And every artist who's ever done any kind of creative undertaking knows that there's always problems and there's always setbacks and delays. But if you don't communicate, you're an asshole.
There's a Wharton survey of Kickstarter projects that said something like 70% are delivered, but delivered late.
Yeah. Well, I think if you think about the real world, or I don't know, maybe that's the wrong way to put it, but the so-called real world for a second. If you think about the so-called real world in manufacturing products, you never know what's late because you don't see it till it hits the shelf. Because the way the system is set up is the delays happen and delays happen. But things have been funded quietly in the background. So if a product comes out 8 months late, you never know as the end consumer because
Yeah,
you haven't been
the
following the whole
transparency
plot.
isn't there.
Exactly. And I mean, if we knew as the consumer of a car or a radio or a CD, all of the crazy details and setbacks and family problems and studios getting flooded and all the things that happen, I mean, it's an overwhelming amount of information that we're protected from. All we know is we go into the store and we buy it. But I kind of think this is beautiful. I mean, it makes art making and product making, the transparency isn't just about the transparency. It's about everyone being more in the know about what's happening in their community, which I really like.
But when we're comparing a project on Kickstarter to like a, you know, a jar of peanut butter on the grocery store shelf, that jar on the grocery store shelf has investors, and the company is accountable to the investors, and the investors get to have shareholder updates. They get to say like if the company's really messing up. But with the Kickstarter, it's you're kind of an investor, you're kind of a patron, but it's also this third thing where you don't get to quite have say.
Yeah, it's a strange kind of gray area. Well, I think this is also where it's important to say that I think there's a fundamental difference between art and stuff. Peanut butter is one thing, and the end consumer's experience of peanut butter, I would argue, is simpler than an end user's experience of a record album. Because the record album is fundamentally about what the artist has to say and what the artist wants to share. Peanut butter is not really about what the peanut butter maker wants to share with you. It's about you liking the fucking peanut butter. And those two things are they're fundamentally different. And this is where things, I think, are getting really dangerous, which is people looking at art as a just as a product. And that's the wrong way to think. The, you know, there is all this tangible stuff, and you see people doing wonderfully creative things around making tangible tokens for their backers and their patrons and their supporters. But everybody knows it's not so much about those tangible tokens. It's about the intangible, the art itself. You know, that's why it's like it's easier to do a Kickstarter for a thing that is a thing instead of a thing that's just, you know, an idea. Music has got this kind of fundamental paradox, which is like you can't touch music. You can't, it's not just a product. You can't say that, you know, when you have that CD, you have the music. The music could have just as easily been emailed to you for no money, and it doesn't have to be in a plastic box. And everybody knows this. But, you know, people still want that token, mostly because they want to help the artist, not so much because they want the piece of plastic.
But there are cases on Kickstarter where it seems like the reward is definitely a large part of the reason why people back it.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm not saying that all Kickstarter backers out there are just like nice philanthropists who don't want any stuff.
Does that transactional nature that's kind of baked into the cake, does that set up a problematic relationship?
I think it does, but I think there's a problematic relationship any way you cut it. If you're an artist or musician and you want to get your art to a bunch of people, and it's kind of pick your poison. You can either choose to have a bunch of label people and middlemen and distributors cause you a headache, or your fans can cause you a headache. Either way, there's going to be a headache. I would rather have the headache directly with my fans than arguing with a bunch of people at a record label. And I mean, this is a whole new way of looking at things, because I grew up in the 80s where it was unthinkable that artists would be coming directly to me for help. You know, as a teenager, I would go to the mall, I would go into Musicland, I would buy my Prince LPs, and that was it. I never even thought about where that money was going or whether Prince was getting it or whether Prince needed it. It was just all, you know, he lived in a mystery castle and there were mystery label people, and it just, none of these thoughts occurred to me. And now the fact that the industry has imploded the way it has and artists can be accountable if they want to be, it's pretty amazing, but it requires an ongoing conversation. And that's the thing that's baffling everybody. Is there isn't a simple answer and a simple solution. The answer is the artists just need to constantly talk with their audiences about what's going on. And it's a weird answer. It's a strange solution. But it's really, as I've seen, the only one that works. And I noticed this. If you've been researching this, you probably noticed this. There was a kind of a press upheaval some months ago, because this guy Deacon from Animal Collective had bailed on all of his Kickstarter supporters. And
this is for that project where he was going to Africa to make an album.
Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing is, if you look at what he did, you know, the only mistake he made is he dropped the ball on communicating with his fans. Because if he had just been in constant communication with those 250 people and said, here's what's going on, here's why my project is late, here's why I don't think it can happen, what should we all do, how can we fix this, none of those people, or I mean, reasonably, those people wouldn't have been upset. They would have been on the journey with him, which is why people want to get involved with an artist in the first place. Mm-hmm. And if you just go radio silent, the whole structure falls apart. And it's like the communication itself is the currency.
If you were a backer on that project and you didn't hear from Deacon, what would you do?
I'd be bummed.
Would you ask for your money back?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would want an explanation. And I would feel upset that I hadn't been part of the process. Because I'm the kind of person who would have been very happy, you know, if the communication had been ongoing and he had said, oh, there are these problems, there's these problems, I'm not really happy with these mixes, I'm not really happy with this music. Everyone discussed this with me. Why don't we just, you know, call this a draw, I'll put one of my demos up digitally so you can hear what I'm talking about, and I'm going to give your money to charity. Are you guys okay with that? I have a feeling 99% of those people would have been like, thank you for communicating constantly with us. Wow, you must feel frustrated. Thanks for letting us in on your process. Thanks for sharing, you know, some of your demos with us. And yes, go ahead, give the music to charity. And you kind of let the audience decide with you. And if there's a couple dissenting people going, no, I want my record, you kind of say, hey, I'm really sorry, sometimes things don't work out. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of like lending money to a friend. You know, this is what comes up with Kickstarter all the time. You know, if your friend comes to you and says, hey, I'm in a really tight spot, I can't cover my rent, can I borrow $500? And then you see that friend at a bar a couple nights later, like buying shots for everybody. You just feel shitty. And, you know, as long as your friend is honest with you and has communicated, oh, I covered my rent and then I got a paycheck and this is what's happening, this is what's happening, this is what's happening in my life, here, this is the story, then you don't really have a chance to get upset. But the communication's important, and artists aren't used to doing that. You know, I grew up with this sort of myth of artists being this mystical, mythical, mysterious, untouchable, beautiful, tortured people locked up in rooms, you know, writing music and getting suicidal and doing whatever artists do. But if something like Kickstarter, something like crowdfunding is going to work, it really only works if people are following your plot, following the story.
So let's talk about your experience for the last album. What was the hardest part?
Hardest part of what?
Is it fulfilling the rewards? Is it that transparency thing where you have to be an artist that talks about your experience?
Well, honestly, my Kickstarter grievance is probably a pretty rare one. But the toughest thing about my Kickstarter was after it happened, everyone thought I was rich. And I was so shocked because I knew what the numbers were. You know, I mean, the Kickstarter made $1 million, but it actually cost $250,000 just in shipping. Like, not even manufacturing, not even making all the expensive stuff. Like, $250,000 just to mail everything. And then a lot of money to make everything, and a lot of money, you know, in management commissions and Kickstarter commissions and Amazon commissions. I mean, it was very difficult to stand there and have everyone, you know, thinking that I was a millionaire, where actually it didn't make a lot of money. It grossed a lot of money, and pretty much all of the money got spent, and a lot of people got the record, and that was my goal. I mean, I wanted it that way, but it was rough all of a sudden having my friends think that I was rich, because I wasn't. I was just in a big money cartel. I wasn't actually making a ton. And, you know, I could have done things differently. I could have made my rewards different. I could have made my stuff a lot chintzier and cheaper to ship, and I could have not offered free shipping. I could have done a lot of things to make more money, but I didn't want to. I really wanted to knock this one out of the park and impress everybody who got a package from me. Also, to just kind of make a point about crowdfunding. I mean, I felt like all of a sudden all the eyes were on me as like the Kickstarter chick and the crowdfunding chick. And I didn't want anyone to get the package and open it up and say, oh, this is kind of disappointing. I wanted everyone to just go, oh my God, this is more than I expected. So I went above and beyond and just spent and spent and spent to make everything amazing. And, you know, 25,000, I think about 25,000 people backed me. And a lot of those weren't digital, so a lot of those were packages that had to go in the mail. And, you know, let me tell you, as a mail order business, lots of things go wrong. Lots of people change their addresses. Lots of people don't fill out their surveys. Lots of people don't fill them out right. Lots of people come banging down your door saying, this is wrong, this is wrong, my vinyl's broken, I got too many of this, I got not enough of that. And that's just, I've gotten used to that, though. I've been in the rock and roll mail order business for 13 years, and you just expect that that's all par for the course. You know, for every 100 people who order something from you, 5 or 10 are going to have some kind of problem or complaint. And you just, that's just part of the whole process. You just sort of calmly deal with it, and you try to get to everybody and make yourself as available as possible. And that's the one thing that's really rough if you're a small DIY artist and you're expecting things to be simple and you're on the road in your van and you've set aside 2 days to come home and you and your boyfriend are going to sit in your kitchen and crank it all out and it's all going to be simple. And then all of a sudden, the records are delayed, and all of a sudden, you know, these cards were printed upside down, and all of a sudden this, and you realize, wow, this is complicated, and I have to go back on tour. Who's going to deal with this? And this is what I see a lot of my small, you know, band, this is what I see a lot of the bands who are smaller than me dealing with. It's like, I'm lucky. I've got a fulfillment house of merchandisers who are, you know, doing all of this stuff for me, dealing with the problems for me, and I'm paying them, and they, you know, they get paid to deal with the headache. But if you're just a small DIY artist trying to fulfill 500 orders out of your apartment, the things that go wrong are your problem and your problem alone, and it can be really overwhelming.
So are you all good on fulfillment?
Pretty much. There's still some stragglers out there who are waiting for their vinyl, and a couple people who are waiting for their books. But out of the, you know, I don't know, 15,000 people who ordered a package, I'd say we've gotten to 99% of them. And I catch them all the time. I mean, I'll see someone complaining on Twitter going, ho hum, poor me, life sucks, I never got my Amanda Palmer package. And I write back to those people immediately and say, listen, we want you to get your stuff. You know, email Eric over at my management. He'll take care of you. And most of the time, those people didn't fill out their Kickstarter surveys correctly, and it's their fault. But we still want to find them and take care of them.
And now that an overabundance of telling and showing and transparency of the process, creative process, and the industry process, do you make a profit? So on the video, you say it's like 250K for this and 300 for this.
And sure. Yeah. And a lot of those numbers, you know, those numbers were all ballpark. But, you know, I also chose to do something that not every artist chooses to do. When I was building this Kickstarter, I was also simultaneously trying to launch my record commercially. So the Kickstarter did technically make a little bit of a profit, but I immediately spent all of that profit and then some on putting the record out commercially, putting it into stores, doing a radio campaign, making a bunch of music videos. And, you know, I've said this to a bunch of people, I could have done this differently. I could have done this Kickstarter and then nothing. I could have done this Kickstarter, made a couple hundred grand, not gone on tour with my band, not made any videos, not put my record in stores, and just kept the money and worked on my next record. But I didn't want to. I wanted to go out and tour. I wanted to, you know, make the record available to people in stores if they wanted to get it in stores. And I wanted to push it commercially to see what would happen. And, you know, that's a choice I made. That was sort of a business risk that I took, that I was happy to take. And I've run my whole life like that. I mean, anyone who's ever worked with me, you know, and sometimes much to their dismay in management, they just know the minute I get money, I put it right back into the business and right back into the art. And, you know, but that's just the way I function. If I needed to, you know, if my primary goal had been to make a profit, I could have done things a lot differently. But my primary goal was to get the music to as many people as possible. And I put that before the money.
The Kickstarter campaign just like got a lot more than you had asked for. And it's this wild success and breaks all sorts of records. Then instead of just toasts, afterwards there's this backlash. It seems like it has something to do with the transparency. It was just totally a surprise.
Yeah, it was totally a surprise, mostly because I've been, you know, pulling stunts like that all my life. I mean, my career and the whole movement of the Dresden Dolls and the punk cabaret and what we called the Brigade, which was our sort of volunteer core of fans who would come and perform at our shows. This is just part and parcel of my life. And, you know, I wrote a lot of blogs about it. I've been crowdsourcing everything from food to rides to places to stay to guest musicians to, you know, passing the hat for my opening bands since the dawn of time. And so, you know, when I was getting this tour together and talking with Jarek, my bassist, who did the string arrangements, you know, it wasn't even that we needed, like desperately needed string players for the tour, but I said, wouldn't it be fun if we just asked local fans in every city if they wanted to come play with us? And he said, yeah, that sounds messy. And I said, oh, it'll be fun. They'll have fun. We'll get some string players. I'm sure some of them will be terrible. Some of them will be good. And let's do it. And nowhere, even in the back of my mind, did I think this could backfire. Because I've done it so many times, and the fan base is always so enthusiastic to be involved in whatever way and to volunteer in whatever way. But I think, you know, the minute you look rich and you look sort of powerful and in a position of control, I think the tables really turn. And I think that's what upset people. And the people who were angry, and a lot of it was from classical musician world, they had a legitimate gripe in general, you know, that musicians are often underpaid and, you know, people are constantly asking musicians for favors and to do stuff for free. But this was a different, you know, my situation and my community, we sort of play by a different set of rules. And I was asking my fans to volunteer if they wanted to come hop up on stage with us and do two songs. I wasn't, you know, tricking a bunch of classical musicians into my lair and then not paying them. And the thing that sucked most about that was just feeling so misunderstood and also just wanting to say, like, no, you don't understand my fan community. We've been doing this for years. We do this with each other. This is this thing that we do. We kind of have a different sort of culture over here where we help each other out, and I play for free all the time, and people hop up on stage with me all the time, and fans are always doing crazy things with us. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was all of a sudden a more high profile, and it hurt. It really hurt my feelings to feel that misunderstood. And that was me, but I also felt pain for my musicians. Because when this happened, all these people had volunteered, had like happily, enthusiastically volunteered. And now they were being put in the spotlight and made to feel uncomfortable. And that made me the most angry. It's just all these awesome, cool, weird volunteers from different walks of life. And all of a sudden, people were, you know, people were judging them. And that made me angry. But it all, you know, it all worked out fine in the end. And as I suspected and as I expected, the volunteers who did jump up on stage with us were really just happy to be with us, and we were happy to be with them, and the exchange was a good one. And that's all I ever care about at the end of the day. I mean, people are going to always think what they want about me and the way I do things, but as long as everybody with me and everyone on my stage feels like their value and they're of value and they're being valued the right way, that's the most important thing.
At some point in the tour, you decided to start paying instead of just having them be volunteer supporters that get a drink and a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do that because the backers had become investors and then they gets some type of say in the artistic process?
No. In fact, I think it's really important to note that every artist has a really different line when it comes to how much input my public can have in my stuff. And for instance, I have seen artists put up backer awards saying, I will write a song about you or for you and put it on my album. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to feel that kind of pressure. And to me, that would have felt, for this kind of record that I was making, it would have just felt a little cheesy and a little inauthentic. Because I knew what record I wanted to make. I had it done in my head. I had the songs picked. And that would have just felt like an add-on. And, you know, I have really, really strong feelings about my art and how I want to make it. And there are certain realms where I'm totally happy to have things get messy. Like, I'm totally happy to have amateur string players who play totally out of tune with me on stage. And for some reason, that's okay with me. But I don't want those people on my recordings. And that just happens to be my line. Every artist draws their lines in different places. And that's one of the things you're seeing and learning, looking at all these crowdfunding sites and what people are and aren't willing to do. And none of it's right and none of it's wrong. But it tells you a lot about a person's, you know, personal thresholds, how and where they draw the lines with their art and their privacy and their time and their energy. And, you know, sometimes people are really shocked that I draw my lines where I do, but I just try not to apologize for it and say, listen, this is, you know, like, these certain things are untouchable. Like, when I have a song and it's, and I know how I want it to be, I don't want anyone fucking with that. But, you know, I'm totally happy to, like, scrawl everybody's names on my body in magic marker and take pictures of it. That feels perfect and totally within the realms of fun and possibility. Whereas another artist, you know, might just, like, want to put a gun to their head before they did something like that. So everyone's got their own style. But that's also, that's a beautiful part of this evolution. It's like, everyone's got their own style. Everyone's got their own way of doing it. There is no one way, and there is no set of answers. Every artist is figuring it out for themselves.
So you're an artist sort of on the front lines of this type of arts funding becoming the new normal, and it seems like it's not going to be going away. Fans are feeling more entitled, and transparency is sort of a double-edged sword. Are these things going to change the art?
I would be amazed if the answer was no. Because every time you look at the course of history and the technologies available and the systems that were happening from the dawn of time, it always changes the art. But that's fine. The art evolves. The artists evolve. And there's no period of human history where artists didn't need to hustle. But they've had to hustle in different ways depending what was going on, where the money was coming from, where the support was coming from, what the medium was. And, you know, there's some great constants. People will always need art. And there's always going to be artists who feel called to make it. Those are two things I think never change. But the means of exchange, the tools we use, the conversation we have, this constantly evolving. And I think it does affect the art. If it didn't, we'd be weird. And I think that's fine. The worst thing we could do is not embrace it.
Amanda, are there any questions that I didn't ask or something that you want to mention on this topic?
Yeah, actually, there's one thing. I mean, I don't know if you can squeeze it in, but there's one fascinating thing about my Kickstarter that I think most people have overlooked.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that is the ability of a crowd to get together, trust each other, and make something happen. And I saw that with my $5,000 house party packages. I sold 35 $5,000 backer rewards, and the reward was, I'll come to your house or wherever you want, and I'll play a party for you and 50 people. And you can either buy it outright, or you can go out and organize and get 50 people to all chip in $100, or 10 people to chip in $500, do whatever you want. And a few people just plunked down $5,000 and, you know, bought me outright, and, you know, and I've gone and played their houses and played for their friends, and it's been great. But the majority of people started Facebook groups. One person raised their hand and said, I'll gather the cash. You can trust me. I'll put it in my bank account. And all these people trusted each other. And they all made it happen. 50 people got together in South Africa. 50 people got together in Israel. 50 people got together in Australia, Puerto Rico, Germany. And that, to me, is one of the best things to come out of this new way of being and new way of thinking, which is, because they were all fans of mine, they fundamentally trusted each other, and they all worked together without my help, without, you know, without me being involved at all. These people all organized. And that, I think, is one of the most powerful things about community and the internet and trust. Because if people are able to do that, they're able to do so much more. And I think you've seen the collapse of, you know, the recorded music industry, and you've seen labels falling left and right. And I think the next titanic structure to fall is going to be the big monopoly of, you know, the people who have been unfairly controlling the live music venues. Because once the power gets into the hands of the fans and the artists, it's going to be incredible.
Do you think you'll go back to Kickstarter for funding another project? Or is there a bitter taste to it?
Oh, no, not at all. There is no bitter taste. I think, you know, I just made this giant record. I worked on this record for a good 3 or 4 years, writing it and putting the band together and getting all these things into place. It's going to be a little while before I do another giant project. But I will absolutely use crowdfunding, because there's no simpler way. There's no more direct way of doing business with my fans. The only way to do it that could possibly be more direct is if I built the same crowdfunding tools right on my website. But I like Kickstarter. Kickstarter is kind of its own community as well, and there are plenty of people who supported me on Kickstarter, who found me through Kickstarter, because they're fans of Kickstarter, and they, you know, they like the system, they like the tool, they like the community. So I'd happily use it again. And I may use different systems for different projects. I may want to do just a little solo piano recording that I can easily pay for myself. And, you know, Kickstarter is really good for a big project where you want everyone to get excited ahead of time, and you do need a lot of capital. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is where, like, the questions get really interesting. I did a survey on Twitter yesterday because I was working on this TED Talk that I have coming up.
Yeah.
And I asked my Twitter followers, I said, should Justin Bieber and Lady Gaga be allowed to crowdfund? And, you know, 80% of people out there were emphatically like, well, yes, of course. And 20% of people are like, no, they should pay for it themselves. They have huge labels. They're rich. They have money. And this is, like, to me, this is the fascinating question. It's a tool that anybody should be able to use for anything they want. You know, and the shame that artists have around asking needs to fall away. And the kind of weirdness and shame that audiences feel about doing direct money transactions with artists, that's got to go too. Because once all the shame falls away in both directions, and everyone can just meet in the middle and do business without a bunch of people getting in the way, that's when everyone's going to be the best off.